What I love about our Sunday morning listeners is the common sense that they spread. Not that common, apparently, but there's no excuse not to know what's going on when you talk to Aussies. There's stories about tomatoes and AI and Jerry Harvey and diesel prices and what Aussies are doing all over in Chad and India and Port Vila and Lake Eyre. It's a cheap trip around Australia, around the world. G'day, this is Macca.
Hi, Macca. It's Kaz and Andrew. How are you?
Good, thank you, Kaz.
We're just travelling to work this morning. We thought we'd give you a call because we love listening to your show.
So what are you doing, Kaz? Sorry, I missed that last bit.
We're driving to work.
Uh-huh.
I work in aged care. And my husband works for Test Networks.
Uh-huh. And where are you?
We're from Tryabunna.
In Tassie?
Yes, in Tasmania.
Right.
So we thought we'd give you a call and say good morning and that we love listening to your show.
Good on you. And you're a long-time resident of Tassie, or what's your story, Kaz?
My background, I'm from Papua New Guinea and I'm married to a beautiful Tasmanian man.
Uh-huh.
And I work in aged care, so I work for the home.
Right, yep. And, how long have you been doing that?
Oh, it's now my 14th year.
Well, good on you. It's a big industry, isn't it? And more need all the time as we're an ageing population.
Very true. I love my job and the people I work with.
Well, that's the main thing. If you love your job, it's not like a job in lots of ways. And it gives you a sense of purpose. I'm sure you must feel good every day about the good things you do for people because they must appreciate it too, Kaz.
Yes, thank you.
So, Kaz, is autumn kicked in Tryabunna? It did the other day where I live. It was a really cold day, but and it had been about 30 every day, and then all of a sudden, bang, it went down to about 11 or 10 or 11. So
autumn's kicked in. We're now, when we left home was about 4 degrees. Now it's 7.
Well, that's fresh. At least you can sleep at night, Kaz, when it's cool.
Yes, I'm sort of looking for forward to the when winter kicks in and I have the wood eater.
Yeah, well, that won't be far away by the sound of things. Yeah.
Sorry?
I said that won't be far away by the sound of things. If it's 4 degrees this morning, it's almost time for fires, I think.
Yes. Yep.
All right, Kaz, and when did you come to Australia?
Oh, I came to Australia in 1996. So I've been in Australia for about like 30-odd years.
There you go. Well, and maybe you're getting a football team in like a year or two, apparently.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it, actually.
Yeah, well, people are mad about football everywhere, but especially so in PNG, aren't they? They love their rugby league up there.
Yes. Everyone likes the Queensland Maroons and the Blues.
Yes, they do. It's wonderful to see people just smiling and just enjoying it and. Yeah, getting stuck into it. So that'll be interesting, an interesting time. Then I think it's 28, is it? 28 when it starts or 27? 28 probably, maybe.
Somewhere, yeah, along the line, yep.
All right, Kaz, good on you. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Macca. Have a lovely day and thank you for, we just love listening to your show.
Well, thank you. And it's because it's people like you that we can all listen to, Kaz. I love it too. Good on you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
See you, Andrew. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Chris is in Echuca. Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Macca Legend. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. What's happening?
Oh, mate, we're just trying to wrap up our tomato harvest here at the moment in Echuca. So we're had a pretty reasonable season, yeah. So the business I work for is called Kagomi. We're Australia's biggest tomato processor, so make all your paste and dice tomatoes that you see in your supermarket shelf.
Right, and that all happens in Echuca.
Yeah, Echuca, Victoria, mate, that's right. So we're the main factory's in Echuca there, and then we've got our farm sort of spread out sort of 150k radius of Echuca. I'm just on my way to Lake Boga this morning to have a look at a crop there. So
are these under glass or out in the open or what?
No, all out in the open, mate, all out in the open on raised beds, all under subsurface drip irrigation. So we process annually about 200,000 tonnes of tomatoes.
Wow.
And this year we're short a little bit because we're getting a lot of pressure from imports. So we're scheduled to process about 150,000 tonne this year, and we've got about 10 days left of the season to go.
And where do the imports come from?
A lot of it's Chinese and obviously Italian and pressure from America as well, Macca.
Yeah, just tough being in business, isn't it, eh? And especially because we've got all the extra costs, because diesel would factor into your place too, wouldn't it?
Oh, mate, yeah, I wouldn't want to tell you the number. It's hurting us every day. So we've got, nine harvesters running around the clock 24/7. We've got about 400 people employed at the moment keeping the show going. So, when we're going flat out, we're pushing about 4,000 tonnes of tomatoes a day. So that's a pretty busy place, and we've got 120 truckloads of tomatoes across our weighbridge in 24 hours.
So you have your harvest, and this is in summer it finishes, because winter down there in Echuca can get cold, so not good for growing tomatoes in the winter, I wouldn't have thought.
No, that's right, Macca. So, yeah, we plant in start of end of September and then finish sort of mid-November, and we start harvest sort of Australia Day, and, yeah, we'll be finishing in about 10 days' time. So it's been a reasonable run. We did have a lot of rain there sort of start of March, which has affected us a little bit. We've got to walk around about 20,000 tonne due to mould, which is pretty upsetting for us and our growers. Pretty hard game.
So what do you do with that? You just put it in the ground again, do you?
Yeah, unfortunately, just got to disc it in, Macca, and walk away from it. Pretty sad story to be doing that. So,
yeah, it's been very wet and humid where I live too, and I think generally there's been a lot of rain around, hasn't it? And it hasn't gone away. It's not like we hit the rain. It's sort of been, yeah, and the heat, and then, you know, it's everything gets mould on it, and I assume tomatoes are no different.
No, that's right. You know, they're 95% water, so they're pretty perishable. So, Macca, the point of my call is I just wanted to get to your listeners and, you know, just obviously buy Australian. 95% of our product is for domestic consumption in Australia, all the paste and dice. So I want to encourage your listeners to look at the label. You know, a lot of the stuff on the shelf you see says made in Australia, but it's from imported product. So, you know, turn the back of that label and you'll see the 100% Australian or 90% Australian. That's all coming from us down here in Echuca.
Chrissy, good on you, mate. And so what do you do? Your season finishes, what, in a week or two?
Yeah, that's right, mate. But we also process carrots. So we grow 20 to 30,000 tonne of carrot a year. That's going for juice. And then we do about 10 to 12,000 tonne of apple and pear. So that goes into your baby food products that you see domestically and a bit for export.
And pears are being harvested now, aren't they? I think we went picking pears,
right.
I think, in February,
yeah.
I think. So they'll be around for a while. They keep. So you're busy over winter too, and autumn and winter?
That's right, mate. Yeah, so we've got a winter crop program too. We've got about 6,000 acres of cropping we do as well as the tomato side of the gig. So, and then we process a lot of beetroot down here in Echuca as well. So your Edgel brand that comes through our facility into Simplot, which is great.
Well, Chris, I'll tell you what, it just makes me feel good to know that Australians are out there growing stuff, and, you know, we should be proud of them. We should be buying Australian wherever we can, because you look at the mess around the world, and if you don't support Australia, you know, then next thing it hits the fan and we can't get boats here or whatever, and then we're hoist on our own petard. I mean, it's just, it makes no sense. Well, it makes complete sense to do that. It makes no sense to be closing our industries for so-called cost benefits, and there's no cost benefit when you haven't got anything.
That's exactly right, mate. Like, there's only two tomato processors left, so it's us and SBC in Shepparton there, and, they're only doing a small volume. So, as I said, yeah, encourage your listeners to turn that sauce bottle on the shelf and make sure you're buying 100% Australian, guys.
I do, Chrissy. Good on you, mate. Nice to talk to you. There's some tomato, you know, I buy tomato sauce, I look at it and it says, I always look for it, and it says, this product has at least, 18% or 9% or 10% or 11% Australian content. And I think, really?
Yeah.
And then you see others and they got 99%. So, you know, it's a no-brainer, really.
Absolutely, mate. You may pay a dollar extra, but it's keeping our industry alive and a lot of farmers going. So appreciate everyone's support.
And it keeps everybody going. You don't realise that. You don't think, I've saved a dollar. But you're not saving a dollar because it'll hit the fan generally across the place and then you won't be saving. So anyway, I'll shut up, Chris. Good on you, mate. Great to talk to you.
Good on you, Macca. Keep up the good work, mate. You're a legend.
And keep taking the tablets? Yeah. All right.
Good on you, mate. Good on you.
See ya. Bye. Where are you, Will?
I'm just coming through Quambie at the moment. There, Macca.
Uh-huh. Quambie.
Yeah, north of Cloncurry, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
What are you up to?
I'm just on the way to work this morning. We just left the Curry races here this morning on the way to work now.
And where's work, Will?
North of Cloncurry, in the station there.
All right. What do you do?
Not far from Burke and Wills.
All right. And what do you do?
Just a ringer up there, Macca.
Just a ringer.
Just a ringer.
Willie, I was in Banana some years ago, 5 years ago. This bloke comes in and he's probably looked like you. He's got boots on and his jeans and he's got a big hat on. And I got talking to him and I said, what do you need? He says, I come in for me a latte. And he'd driven 70 Ks in the mornings to get his coffee. He worked on a station somewhere. And anyway. Sorry, Will.
The things you do for a cuppa Joe.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing, isn't it? It's become the national drink.
Yeah.
It's supplanted beer.
Between that and Forex.
Yeah, so, Will, what's your story? How long have you been there? What's the name of the station?
Gleeson Station. This is my second year there now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And where are you from?
Baraba, in the Upper Horton there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Just north of Tamworth.
You're just out of Tamworth, yeah.
Yeah. I just rang up to tell you how cold it's been up here lately.
Tell me.
Oh, it's like, I don't know, the degrees or anything like that. I'm not that switched on. Hang on. Right now, 13 degrees right now. And that's cold enough for here.
I know. Especially,
it's very chilly.
Especially this time of year because, I mean, it can be, but usually autumn doesn't kick in and north, you know, the further north you go till, and sometimes it doesn't kick in at all. You have a very mild winter and it's warm, but you'll have your maybe get your dryzerbone on, Will.
Yeah, I might have to. Well, it only just stopped raining about a week ago, and now here we are freezing cold.
Yeah, that's the trouble. I hope we don't get one of those winters where it's been wet or it stays sort of wet and it doesn't dry out and it'd be
miserable. Yeah.
So,
it's a bit dry further down south at the moment, then, Mac. I don't think they could do with a bit of rain.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, Victoria and some parts of Gippsland and stuff, they're very dry. And although, there's been.
And northern New South Wales as well, there. At home, it's very, very dry, yeah.
Uh huh. So, you enjoy life on Gleeson Station?
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. Love my life there, yeah.
And how did you get that gig?
Family, friends, contacts. You know, it's not what you know, it's how you know in Macca.
And so what's the future? You want to manage a station sooner or later or get your own or what?
Something like that, that'd be right. disposable income, Macca. I go party on the weekends. That's all it sounds of that.
And so you went to the races yesterday in the Curry.
Yeah, I did. They called off the first one. It was too wet, apparently, so we're going for round two, and they went all right.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
It wasn't too bad. There was a good amount of people there. It wasn't too packed. It was pretty good.
Yeah, well, it's nice to get together too, isn't it? You know, when you're out, you know, out somewhere like the Curry, it's get together. It's more than social. The races. It's a planned. It's a time to get together and talk and see what's happening in another next of the woods.
That's right. And Curry's a social place. It's good to be there.
Yeah.
Plenty of mates there.
All right, mate. Good on you. Well, great to talk to you, Will.
You too, Macca.
See ya.
See you later.
Fiona, where are you?
Good morning, Macca. I'm in Nowra.
Uh-huh. What's happening?
Well, I heard you say earlier that you're going to be at the Sydney Royal Easter Show on Thursday, and I'm also going to be there. So I thought I'd give you a call and let you know what I'm up to.
What are you up to?
Well, it's the poultry judging day on Thursday.
Uh-huh.
It is, yes. And it's also part of that is the egg judging day. And I have the honour and privilege of stewarding for the egg judge on that day.
And whereabouts is that? I'm going to be at the district exhibits for at 11 o'clock, but I can come down and see the eggs. Where's that at?
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, so it's in the poultry pavilion.
I'll
the
find
name.
It.
The name of that hall, I don't know off the top of my head.
But I'd say it'd be the Poultry Pavilion. Yeah, someone will know where that is.
Someone will know where it is. It's on the map, actually, so it map. Should be pretty easy to find.
All right. Yeah. Well, so you'll be there on Thursday?
I will be, yeah. All and right. Last Thursday, I went to a local high school and helped the high school kids prep their birds and showed them how the eggs are judged ready for the school's comp.
Isn't that a great thing?
That was a good fun day too.
Yeah, well, you can tell me about it on Thursday. I'll see. What time will you be there?
Well, I'm going to be there all day Thursday and also all day Friday. So we're there manning the egg table.
All right. And I'll see you there.
Okay, there's a workshop on at 10 on Friday.
All right, see ya.
Thanks, Macca.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca. Hello.
Hello.
Yep, g'day.
Oh, morning. I'd just like to mention about the fuel crisis that it seems now politicians and the people are talking that we should drill for crude oil. Australia has reserves and do all that. I think before talking about that, they should think that they will have to build refineries for that because we had 8 refineries and we got only 2.
Well, did you hear that?
To New Zealand, he got only 1.
This is Mario. Sorry, Mario, my paper deliverer.
Yeah, that's me.
The paper man. Yeah, Mario, did you hear, was it Chris this morning? No, it wasn't Chris, it was John. And he said Altona, there's an a refinery at Altona, and although it's been closed, it's still up to speed, and it could be up to speed in 8 weeks to be doing petrol again.
Yeah, I heard him, and I'd just like to give you an analogy for people to think. At the time when they were closing the refineries, the Minister for Energy from the Commonwealth says, oh, look, don't worry about it. We are importing crude. Now we are importing finished products. Now, the problem is that, imagine, the refineries that we had, they were built in the 50s, 60s. Now, if you want to build one now with the environmental constraints, it might take 10 years until they get clearance to build one.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, if we had the refineries, you could have got crude from Venezuela, Mexico, the States, across the Pacific, which is a safe route, and we would have been laughing here. But it's more or less like if you go to the supermarket, buy a steak, buy potatoes, carrots, and eggs, you go home to cook your meal, but you don't have a stove. So you have to get a delivery from somewhere to have your dinner because you cannot cook. And here we don't have refineries. We cannot refine for what Australia needs if we drill for oil. So before drilling for oil, I think better build a couple of mega refineries and then we'll be all right.
No, seems to be no planning, no forward planning at all in Australia. And indeed, you know, we got caught short when COVID came, of course. Pandemics, everybody knows in the health industry that pandemics are around and sooner or later a pandemic will arrive. But no, we didn't prepare for that. That's not going to happen. We'll deal with that. And you saw what happened. And it's the same with petrol. I mean, everybody knows there's going to be problems around the world sooner or later. But Ronnie Finnimore. I'm going to play a bit of Ronnie Finnimore, who we talked to last week about that. No planning.
The thing is that they did not, when they were closing the refineries, the government did not build a strategic reserve for maybe 3-6 months. We got nothing. It's just unbelievable.
Is it affecting your business? You're delivering papers around the place. It'd be costing you more for petrol or diesel, whatever you use.
The Beetle doesn't take much petrol,
You got a little Volkswagen, yes.
He goes around, with an oil rack, you know. But that's not the point. You got a lot of things to consider. Even let's say all the emergency services. You know, we don't have diesel. I mean, fire trucks, ambulances, patrol cars.
And what about Chris in the Tuca processing tomatoes? He said, "I don't want to tell you how much diesel we use for harvesting. It's one of the last 2 processing industries in Australia. Tomatoes. They do it in the Tuca, and because they're down on the number of tomatoes they process, partly because they had a rainy time with a lot of mold and stuff on tomatoes. But we're importing tomatoes from China and from America and from Brazil and stuff like that. But then again, if you don't make your own food, you again, the same thing applies to does to petrol. You know, if you're going to import all your food, you're going to be up, you know, up the creek again. So, you know, what's going on? What's going on?
Look, I give you, for the country people, a sort of loose figure, because I saw it on YouTube. It's a road train from BP that has 5 trailers, right? And each trailer takes 40 tons, which is 40,000 liters. 5 trailers, it was carrying 200,000 liters of diesel just to deliver right in the middle of Australia, everywhere. That's just only one delivery. That sort of thing is not happening. And the other thing, combined, the Kurnell refinery and the Clyde refinery, they are not there anymore, they were pumping daily like 1 million liters of fuel, commercial fuel, to the airport, and they still have to import. Yeah. Imagine now.
Yeah. It's a good idea to close all that. I mean, we're just full of great ideas here, the clever country. Murray, I've got to fly, but nice to talk to you, mate.
All right, take care.
See you, bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Peter McDonald from Barham, how are you?
Good, Peter.
I think we should make Mario our energy minister.
No, we'll stop getting the papers then. Anyway, right. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, Macca, I rang you a couple of times last year. I do the flights over Lake Eyre.
Uh-huh.
And I just completed my first flight over Lake Eyre just this week on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And the water out in northern New South Wales, southern Queensland there, and South Australia is just incredible. I thought last year was amazing. And out in the desert, it is just amazing. Around William Creek, it's in the middle of Anna Creek Station, 24,000 square kilometres, and it's a cow to the square kilometre. And I'd normally tell my passengers, you know, if you're a cow out here, you'd want to pick your square kilometre pretty well. And for Dingham, they'd be able to run a cow to the acre out there now. There is green grass a foot high everywhere. Just amazing. And between all the sand dunes, there's just a lake. Up at Birdsville, where the Big Red Music Festival is, we flew over Big Red, and there's just a lake each side of Big Red. I see they've just cancelled it. They were trying to relocate it, but every bit of high ground is just surrounded by water. Just truly amazing.
Can you tell the Cooper out there? I mean, I know that the Cooper was all over the place, and there's been a lot more rain in the territory and in South Australia. So what's the Cooper looking like? Can you tell the Cooper, or is it just one huge lake?
No, it's got a power of water in it, yeah, all up above Innamincka and downstream of Innamincka. There's just been big rainfalls everywhere. Like last year, it was mainly reliant on the Diamantina and the Cooper, but this year there is water everywhere, and the lake is really full already, and that's before the water out of the Cooper and the Diamantina gets there.
And you're in Barham, where it's dry as a chip and the pot plants are out on adjustment.
Yeah, that's about it. We have had a bit of rain in the last month that, we could do with a bit more. But it's, yeah, hopefully, they say all droughts start in the north and end in the north, and hopefully this one will be here soon. It has to, with the water just lying out there in among all the sand dunes. It's just incredible.
One of the things I'd heard here on the program, and I've been here a while, is that when there's a lot of water in Lake Eyre, and there's been a lot of water in there now for months and months and months and months, that there's more rain around the place too, and there has been, except for you in Barham and other places. Northern New South Wales, there's not a lot of... It's been dry there too, but others have been drenched.
Yeah, that's dead right. And, like, the evaporation is going to be amazing out there, because there's just so many shallow little lakes in among those sand dunes. It's incredible. And that last year, there were no pelicans in Lake Eyre, and this year, the pelicans have just arrived, only in the last week.
They're late.
Yeah, they're late. Well, I think there's probably too much water up north. There must have been, because, and the fish are too easy to catch up there.
Yeah, I better get out there and have a look at it. I mean, people tell me about it, like you, and what do? Land at William Creek and then off you go.
Trevor right there. You can go from Birdsville Aviation, fly people there. Trevor Wright does from William Creek, and they also do it at Maree. And there's still a bit of colour, a bit of red in Lake Eyre. But the pelicans were amazing when I landed in William Creek. We were the only tourists in Birdsville and again in William Creek because all the roads were closed. And I was talking to Trevor Wright in William Creek, and he said, "Did you see any pelicans?" And I said, "No." And he said, oh, the Pelicans are meant to be there. And I was giving Trevor a hand to do a few jobs. And then he said, oh, we'll go and have a look. So we took off in Trevor's plane and, flew out to Delhunty Island, and there were thousands of pelicans out there. I sent you through a photo of the pelicans.
All right.
Just amazing this year. And the green feed. Trevor said he can't ever remember William Creek being so green.
It's an amazing body of water, isn't it, Lake Eyre? It's a sea. No wonder they thought there was an inland sea or something. There might be an inland sea, and there is. And now, of course, it is an inland sea, but it's not like a big ocean. But it's a huge amount of water.
It looks like an ocean now. It's incredible. And that's just with the local rain. Before the Diamantina water, like, it's still a lot of water up above Birdsville, and it's the same with the Cooper Creek. There's so much water to get to Lake Eyre, and it is really full already now, so it's going to be quite interesting to see. They're talking that it's going to be, you know, the biggest fill on record, and it's just the feed out there, the green grass is what I couldn't get over, and the insects that are turning up there in the William Creek Hotel. They were sweeping out buckets of beetles. They're going around putting the expander foam around the outside, trying to keep the bugs out. But these big beetles are in the pub every morning. It's just they've come from everywhere. The insects just out there in the desert.
Well, that's good, because there's no insects in the cities, because there's no habitat left for insects in the cities. We're in building everything.
Concrete. Yeah, everything concrete, tar, and corrugated iron.
Yeah, exactly. Pete, nice to talk to you, mate. I'll come with you one day and get out there. But the water will be there for a good while, I reckon.
The Cooper and the Diamantina will probably be flying for a good 3 months yet.
Yeah, I spoke to a bloke some time ago. I think it was when the last flood was there. Was it 2012 or 16? I'm not sure. But anyway, and he said he was kayaking the Cooper, and he said he kept getting knocked over because the current was thing. So he'd be swept along and he'd hit a tree and he'd get tipped out and he'd have to get back into his thing. And, you know, and there's not a lot of – you can't canoe down the Cooper and then say, I think I'll stop now tonight and camp. There's nowhere to camp because there's water everywhere. And if you camp on a little atoll, it's probably full of snakes and goannas and you name it. There's not a lot of spare ground, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's what it's like everywhere. It is amazing. And the mosquitoes out there too. There's a few mosquitoes out there in the green grass. It's like home here in the springtime when we've had a good spring out there. It is amazing.
Flies
are pretty friendly.
Times around Barham are pretty tough at the moment, mate.
We've had a bit of rain, and if we can get a follow-up from that, we will be laughing. And hopefully, the water in the north will find its way down here. It's just a funny old year this year, isn't it, with that cyclone?
I'll say.
Cracking a record. Like, who knows what could happen this year?
That's for the world. Good on you, Pete. Great to talk to you.
Okay, yeah, good. Thanks, Macca.
See you, mate. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Oh, g'day here. Phil here from Wollongong.
It's Ian, yeah. G'day, Phil.
G'day. How are you going?
Yeah, good. What can I do you for?
Oh, look, about fuel storage, did you know during World War II, Australia, starting in 1942, built no fewer than 31 inland fuel storage units?
I didn't know that, yep.
Yep, neither did I until recently. And there are 11 of them in New South Wales, about 6 in Queensland, in places like Toowoomba in Queensland. There's Parkes and Cootamundra and Wallenbean and many other places in New South Wales, 4 in Victoria. Mm. And a friend of mine, Jeff, who worked in rail freight, he said, why don't we build some of these outside cities like Canberra? You know, which use over 1 million litres of, you know, petrol and diesel a day, and other places like Parkes, you know,
well, Wagga. It makes sense, Phil. I think Ronnie Finnemore, who I talked to last week, alluded to that we used to have these fuel depots. I mean, do people not know we live in a country girt by sea, and we're a long way, and as Mr. Keating, or as I call him, expletive deleted, said, you know, we're at the arse end of the world. We're a long way from anywhere. And why don't we – I just can't believe it. And that's been going on and on. And I assume we've had departments of energy or something like that over the last 20 or 30 or 40 years since the World War finished. So when the war finished in 1945, we said, oh, that's it. No, we're right now. Get rid of them. And I think Ron Finnemore said that they closed a lot of those down because they were expensive to run, to keep fuels. Of course, everything's expensive. Everything's expensive, yeah. But you've got to make judgments about, you know, what's expensive and what's common sense, Phil.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah. And Jeff and I, you know, we ran this idea past the former government, federal government, around 2019. We suggested a 1 cent a litre, you know, surcharge just to build the infrastructure. And once the infrastructure is built, paid off, then that levy goes off.
Mm.
And had we done that then, we'd have been much better placed today.
Exactly. Good on you, Phil. Nice to talk to you, mate.
Yeah, likewise.
All right. You're in Wollongong, is that right, this morning?
That's right, yeah. Yes.
And
we import a bit of oil through here too occasionally.
Through Wollongong?
Yeah, Port Kembla.
Uh-huh.
So, just a little bit.
So mostly cars come into Wollongong, don't they?
Oh, yes. We've had the car carriers for at least 10 years now. But, you know, cars need petrol unless you go to electric vehicles.
Yeah, but I think only about 10% of vehicles are solar are electric. So that means about 80 or 90% are petrol or diesel. Yeah.
But you know what? The diesel's the main requirement now. And I think, what was it? And we use about best part of 50 billion litres of diesel and petrol each year now. And the consumption's gone up, whereas perhaps it would really be going down a bit.
Yeah. Good on you, Phil.
Yeah.
Keep in touch.
Right. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks,
bye.
Mate. Bye. This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and I'm sure you'll find my chat with Gerry Harvey interesting. It's about AI, it's about the future, it's about now. And when I rang him, I first asked him, because we were just checking the line, I said, Gerry, can you hear me?
Well, I'm talking to you. Your name's Ian McNamara and you work at the ABC.
Yes, I do.
You're probably overpaid and after this interview, you'll probably get the sack, right? And you probably deserve it, but there'll be another job somewhere for you. You probably should change and become an electrician or a plumber, because that's what AI will make you redundant in your present job.
I hope not, Gerry, but anyway, that's a sobering thought to begin an interview with. Gerry Harvey, good morning and welcome to the program. Thank you for talking to us. I spoke last week to Ron Finnemore about trucking and about the cost of diesel and all that sort of thing, and he said there's going to be a lot of pain, Ian, especially around, he reckons about April, he said, because he deals with people all the time and mostly he carries a lot of food and things like that, but he said there's going to be a lot of pain, and I think we all know that. What's your take on what's happening in Australia at the moment and indeed around the world, Gerry Harvey?
The problem is I'm finding out new things every day, and it's coming from left field. So in the last 10 minutes I had a phone call, which I'm not prepared to tell you what it was about, but it wasn't a good phone call. I hadn't even considered this as a problem, and so it's obvious to me now that certain things are going to happen that I didn't anticipate. That'll be interesting to see where this goes.
And I suppose your job, like anybody's job, when there's a problem, that really is the mark of a person, isn't it? And not so much the problem, but how you deal with it and if you can cope with it. And good people in whatever they're doing learn to cope with it, I suppose. That's the thing you've got going for you, and other people who face problems that they've never thought of before. It's a bit like chaos theory, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it's interesting because you don't want to face these problems on a daily basis, but that's going to happen now. And so even like I breed horses and that. And so 2 or 3 hours ago, they rang me and said, horse transports are going to go up 20%. If it cost me $500 to take that horse down the road, it's now going to cost me $600. That's a very big jump. I'm expecting these sort of things to come in and hit me every couple of days at the moment. It's stuff you hadn't even thought about. Anyway, that'll be interesting. As you said, how do you handle that? What do you do? It'll be something that puts us to the test.
We live in this world now, Gerry Harvey, where one of the main talking points around the world is NVIDIA. If you're not involved with chips, your business doesn't thrive, does it?
Well, I've got my wife, Katie Page. She's going to America every 3 to 4 months and she's having meetings with Qualcomm and NVIDIA and Microsoft, and she's talking to the very top people there, and they're saying to her, you'd best come with your top executives and talk to us every 3 or 4 months, because if you don't come that quickly, the world's going to move so fast that you could be left behind. They're talking to us because when we did the launch of AI in Australia, most of those people over there that watched what we did, and they said, you did it better than anyone in the world. And so we used you as a sort of an example to a lot of other retailers. Look, there's a mob in Australia called Harvey Norman. They're in 8 countries, not only in Australia, but they did it in all those countries, New Zealand, Singapore, Malaysia, Croatia, UK, Ireland, Slovenia. We did it in a way that they thought was more professional than the other retailers. So they're then saying to us, look, we're prepared to help you because you're obviously people that are at the forefront of technology. We're not a technology company. We sell technology. From their point of view, they like to talk to us because of what we did on that launch of AI, one, and two, because we give a retail perspective to what they're trying to do. So they make a chip that goes into a computer for whichever company we're talking about, whether it's HP or Apple or whoever. That chip is becoming very expensive, but it's going to do a lot more things. And so now we're looking at a lot of our product that might go up in price quite considerably in the technology area. And the chip is the big new thing. It's why NVIDIA or Apple or Microsoft, they're talking about them being valued in the trillions, $3, $4, $5 trillion. So they're the people that are going to change our society. And we don't know how exactly. All we know is that they're assuring us it's going to happen. So if I'm in retail, I want to be the one that leads the pack. I don't want to follow the other guy. I want the other guy to be following me. So I want first mover advantage. If I can do that in my retail stores across the world, then that's what we're aiming at.
A lot of ordinary people, just down-to-earth people, are very concerned about AI. I remember reading Stephen Hawking. He said he was very concerned about the impact of AI. You're at the forefront. You've got to be able to manage it and make sure that you're with everything, every change that happens. Do you have any doubts about what it's going to mean? Is it going to be another industrial revolution where lots of people are out of work?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, and neither does anyone else.
No.
What I do is read everything I can, and I listen to all the so-called experts. I try to keep up to date with it, but I'm lost. But I think they're lost a bit as well. And so if we could just wind the clock into the future 3 years or something like that, we'd look back and say, oh, this has been bigger than I thought. Or maybe it's not as big as I thought. Or I didn't see that. No one ever talked about that. That came from left field, or it was
like the phone call you just got a minute ago.
Exactly. People like you and I and lots of others, we're searching for that whatever it is that's what's going to happen. So that's why we're trying to talk to the chip manufacturers, because they're going to give us more information than anyone else. They're the ones, they're making the chip that's going to change the world.
And yet they don't know what the outcome's going to be either.
Now, if you'd said to me 5 or 6, 7 years ago that we'll be selling robot vacuum cleaners by the thousands, and I'd say, but what's a robot vacuum cleaner do? Well, it runs around and does it all for you, and everyone's going to buy a robot vacuum cleaner. I said, what? Now, 5, 6, 7 years ago, I didn't see that. And when I did see the sales in the last 2 years of robot vacuum cleaners, I'm thinking to myself, ooh, what other products coming on the market? Now we've got the robot vacuum cleaner, we've got the robot lawnmower,
we've
got the robot pool cleaner, and we're selling all those things now. And the amount we're selling, the number we're selling it, we sell a robot vacuum cleaner for $2,000 or $3,000. We sell one for $500, but we sell thousands, and we didn't even have that as a product. Now, what other products are we going to have 1, 2, 3 years from now that we currently don't have? And are we going to have a robot that can load the dishwasher or the refrigerator or something? I don't know.
Jerry Harvey, it's scary, I think. You're at the cutting edge. You've got to keep it. We're just on the receiving end, except if you think that AI is going to replace me, I better start looking for a job very quickly, I'd say.
Well, the one thing they're talking about is tradesmen. And so in the old days, tradesmen were great. And then suddenly everyone wanted to become a doctor, a lawyer, or a dentist or something, or then a computer operator or software or something. You probably would have been safer being a plumber or an electrician. And so now you're, I don't know how old you are, Ian, but let's say you're 45 years of age.
That'll do, yep.
You've got to say, I've been made redundant. So now I've got to live on what the government gives me, social services, or I'll go out and I will become a plumber tomorrow. Now, I ran into a guy on the golf course a couple of weeks ago, and I said, hello, how are you? I had a bit, oh, you know a very good friend of mine. He told me who his name was, and he was a solicitor. I said, what do you do? He said, I'm a solicitor. I said, oh, how long have you been doing that? This bloke was 75, and he'd been doing it for 5 years. At age 65 or something like that, he decided he would do law. He's a practicing lawyer at 75 years of age. So why can't we change totally the sort of things that we've been doing all our life? Why can't we become a plumber? Now, I don't know whether you, if I give you the choice, you could either become a plumber, an electrician, or
a financial advisor.
You want to go there, do you?
Okay. No, I don't. No, I'm just making a joke, Jerry.
It's interesting where, and we'll be writing stories, or you will, about the guy that was 37 years of age, never picked up a tool in his life and suddenly became a builder. Well, what's wrong with that? Why couldn't you?
And that's where the money is too, I think, Jerry Harvey.
Yeah, so instead of looking at it and thinking AI is going to ruin my life, it might actually give you a new lease of life.
Well, that's the way you got to look at life anyway, I think, isn't it? You got to be positive and glass half full, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, move with the times, be optimistic and have a go out there. You don't just give up, you look at your options and move on.
Jerry Harvey, I was going to talk to you more about retail, but we'll do that another time. Been great to talk to you, mate.
Thanks, Ian. Bye.
Worrying words from Mr. Harvey, but as my economics teacher at high school used to say, Bill Blakeney, it's a sobering thought, and it was, and it still is. Nothing to get worried about. There's nothing you or I can do about it. In fact, I don't think there's anything that the people at places like NVIDIA or indeed in governments around the world can do about it. We're all being swept along. No good worrying about it. Just get on with life, do the best you can, and as Lawsy would say, be kind to each other. This is the All Over News, and from Alan Cox, he says, I'm getting old and cranky with our government with their waste of money and mismanagement of my money. We see multiple stories of rorting of government money, the NDIS, red tape multiplying like rabbits, the long-term screwing and killing of Australian businesses for a generation, and sending our smarts overseas, and the academic bean counters taking over our education system, where education is based around bums on seats, meaning money for universities above providing a great education. My main complaint today, says Alan, is we got our land valuation this week. I have lived on Budrum, it's in Queensland, for 52 years and my wife her whole 60 years, when we had a 10-acre farm next to us and a few ginger and banana farms just down the road. Our previous land valuation was $478,000. This week, it's $760,000, and he's got a whole lot of asterisks, you know, meaning he's swearing. That's a 60% increase. What a bunch of toads. It's wicked. The government cannot control their spending and they just keep sucking off those who work hard to save their money and waste it. I don't want to go on as it's distressing me. Says Alan, it's distressing all of us, Alan. And while we're talking about petrol and diesel, I don't have to tell this news to people who use the Great Western Highway, who live in the Blue Mountains or the central west of New South Wales, but I thought you might be interested, especially with Easter approaching and people travelling, despite the fuel prices, to tell you that the Great Western Highway at Victoria Pass is closed completely and detours are in place. In fact, the New South Wales government has just earmarked $50 million to upgrade three detours around this, which may or may not be fixed anytime soon. This from Sally Hall. Sally says, the Great Western Highway at Mount Victoria Pass is closed until further notice, Dean, just in case you haven't heard. About 3 weeks ago, the pass was closed for 4 days. Then with more investigation, they closed the rest for 3 months. But we locals are saying it could be years. Who would know? It was reported in a national TV station about dangerous drivers on the road, trucks overtaking on double lines, driving up on footpaths in Lithgow, putting lives at risk. Lithgow is getting up to 11,000 cars, trucks and buses per day that go up the middle of Lithgow to get onto the Bells line of road. It's going to be a long haul because no one knows how long it's going to take. We live in Blackheath. We feel as if we are landbound, can't really go anywhere because of the road. To go out west is fine. It's coming back home because you'll get the traffic coming back. To go to Sydney is another problem with traffic at Medlow Bath. I think there's roadworks around Medlow Bath. The road at Easter has always been busy, but it will be a nightmare this year and people need to leave plenty of time to travel. Drive to road conditions like wet weather, misty, because it's that here today, and please be respectful of others on the road. It is just an accident waiting to happen, and then the road will be blocked for many hours. Please take care, everyone. Be safe and have a lovely Easter, says Sally and David Hall from Blackheath. Nothing great about the Great Western Highway at the moment. G'day, this is Macca.
Hi, Macca. It's Lynn Presley from Blackheath Golf Club.
G'day, Lynn.
I just heard you read out Dave and Sally Hall's letter about the Victoria Pass problems.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of the businesses, our golf club included, is going to be doing it hard while the transport is so difficult. So I'd just like to put a plug in for all of your listeners to come and visit the Upper Blue Mountains and Blackheath Golf Club and all the other businesses.
Yeah.
Maybe not at Easter because, as they said, traffic's terrible.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of weekends after Easter when you can have a lovely time up in Blackheath and the Upper Blue Mountains.
Yeah. For people who don't know, the Great Western Highway has been closed now for 3 or 4 weeks, I think.
Correct.
And it's closed indefinitely. They say 3 months, but they said that they thought the locals think it's going to be much longer than that. Again, we're talking about why we don't pre-plan for petrol and toilet paper and for pandemics and stuff. Seems to me that a road over the mountains like that should be checked all the time. They must have known there's a problem with this road back in the... But again, nobody's got any money to fix it, so we just leave it and leave it till... And all of a sudden, bang, it's blocked. I thought people used to go and check roads, especially roads where they could be problematic, Lynn. I don't know, but I'm prejudging it. But, you know, you need to check your roads, and especially through mountain passes and things like that, you'd think, and there's probably been problems with that road for a good time. I don't know. But, we don't seem to do any forward planning in Australia.
Yeah, well, I'm not an engineer, but the press is reporting that it's a convict bridge and problems were discovered, when cracks appeared in the road.
So the original road was built, you know, in the early 1800s, I assume.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
Yes. The Chamber of Commerce and the local member are doing the best they can to get, you know, support from both government, state and federal government. But if your listeners feel like a visit to the Blue Mountains now would really help the Blackheath and other communities.
Yes, with petrol and diesel prices as well. But there's three detours around that road now, and Lithgow's copping a lot of traffic to go to the Bellsliner Road. And it just seems to me that Easter will be a bit of a nightmare and travelling to and from and getting back. And so it's the one road. So they need to get onto it quick smart.
The new trains are really very comfortable, quite efficient.
It's the way to go, isn't it? Get a train.
They give you spectacular views over the mountains on the way up.
Yeah.
So, and the station's right in the middle of Blackheath, so it's very easy to get around.
Yes, and stops at Medlow Bath, I think, too, doesn't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
Katoomba, Medlow Bath, all the way up the mountains, and all of the communities will benefit.
Better than being stuck in a traffic jam, yes, and get in the train, enjoy the trip, and you're still there. You get off and, yeah, away you go. All right, good on you, Lynn. Good luck.
Thanks, Macca. Bye.
It's a pleasure. I'm Michael Kelly. Good morning, Michael.
Morning, Macca. How are you?
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, this is Michael. He's one of our Australians all over the year in past times. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very good, very good. I'm up in Toowoomba, beautiful Toowoomba.
What are you doing there?
My son's studying at the Qantas World Camp Academy, and we thought we'd come up and pay him a visit.
Is that for, like, pilot training?
Yeah, it's a 55-week course at WellCamp. And
this is a pilot, flying pilot, because, ladies and gentlemen, Mike Kelly is a pilot, but he's a seaborne pilot. He's a marine pilot, but he's doing air training.
Yeah, there's 200 students out there.
Wow.
140 domestic, and there's 60 Indian students there. They all work for Indigo, so when they'll go back to India, they'll fly for Indigo. And at the end of the course, they get interviewed for Jetstar and QantasLink, and the lucky ones will get a start. And the rest will just go out and in the general aviation and one day become commercial pilots.
Or could end up flying, mail planes and stuff all around Australia. That'd be good fun too, I reckon.
That'd be great. We're all flying doctor service, anything in the sky.
Yeah.
So I think the academy's been here for 5 years. They built it because of the shortage of pilots in the future.
Uh-huh.
So they're not like the marine industry. We're still struggling to get young Australians away.
And wouldn't it be nice? I mean, there's still be problems getting it through straits, but it wouldn't be nice if we had our own shipping line or two shipping lines that could do all sorts of things and rescue. You know, they could be used in rescue operations when there's bushfires and people are huddled on the beach, and we have to call the Navy in because we don't have any of our own. I mean, it's, again, lack of planning for the clever country.
Uh-huh. Yeah, as you know, I've been chatting to you for years about our industry, and it's amazing. We're importing all our oil from overseas and pretty much importing our workers because the young fellas and girls can't get a start in the industry. And as Colin just mentioned, the strategic fleet, the government just talked and nothing's happened. But some good news, we've formed a group in Melbourne called Offshore Specialist Ships Australia, OSSA. And we're actually chipping in our own money to sponsor young Australians to go to sea.
Mm-hmm.
And we've successfully got two young engineers away. And this year we're hoping to get probably four or five away. And it's pretty sad, isn't it, when you got to put your own money in to help the future.
And that's what happens. And there are, you know, why don't people hit these... I was talking to Jerry Harvey earlier this morning, and he was talking about trillionaires and trillions of dollars. And so a million's a million. A billion is 1,000 million. So a trillion is 1,000 billion. Is that right? I mean, it's a lot of money. Now, we've got lots of billionaires, not only Jerry Harvey, but you've got Mike Cannon, Big Shot, as I call him, Mal Cannon Brooks, couple in Western Australia, they're interested in helping Australia, they could do better than get onto something like that and give you a few quid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the idea is it's a bursary scheme. So we just pay the students $500 a week. I place them on ships all around the world to get their sea time up, and then they're in the industry. Because we're going to one day, hopefully, we get oil tankers again, a few ships, but you just can't rely on immigration for this.
No, and pilots, knowing how to pilot the Great Barrier Reef and all the places around Australia, through the Torres Straits and all that sort of stuff. Kids should be trained to do these sort of things. I mean, it doesn't grow on trees, if you know what I mean. I mean, people need training, and especially different parts of the world and different parts of the... of the sea have different problems and different, you know, you need to have people who are trained in those sort of things. I mean, God help me.
I was at the Australian Maritime College 2 weeks ago at a Careers Expo day, and I spoke to 24 students. So they want to do what I do, go to sea, work their way up to captain, pilot, maybe one day harbour master. There's 24 in the class, and I'd say only two or four will get sponsored. And the rest will just find other careers. And yet the reef pilots, the Torres pilots, on their websites, there's a link for the visas. So most of the pilots in the reef are from overseas. It's crazy. It's really sad. This industry is just slowly sinking.
Yeah. I was just thinking the other day about kids leaving school. when I was at school, a lot of kids left at 14 years and 10 months when they were, you know, 15. Now, you can't be a pilot if you leave at 15, but Jerry Harvey was talking about jobs and jobs we need, and he was talking about, you know, he said, I should become a plumber or electrician or whatever. I'd probably just electrocute myself. But the point is, university seems to me, in lots of ways, completely irrelevant. I mean, for a lot of kids, I mean, I think, I don't know why you can't leave school at 14 years and 10 months if you want to. And if you don't like school, if you can learn to read and write, that's about it, and add up, then go off and do whatever you want to do. I don't think you need to go to school till you're 18, but maybe that will change, because apparently we need lots of people who are practically skilled, not only pilots, but practically skilled, like plumbers and builders and carpenters and all those sort of people. And, you know, you don't need to go to uni to learn to do that. And they earn good money, and they're very needed.
Yeah, some of the best captains and chief engineers I sailed with, they left school 14, worked in dockyards, worked on fishing trawlers. They had the passion, and they got what they wanted. They're not academically smart, but they're brilliant people.
Well, exactly. They're not academically smart, but they're bright. You know, they're clever. They know what they can, you know, tell a spade from a shovel. They're very good at what they do. And yeah, you know, I'm not sure why we don't let kids leave school at 14 years and 10 months. I think it was when I was at school. But
yeah. Anyway, so if anyone's interested, just Google OSSA shipping, and it's tax deductible too. We're a charity group. And there's a beautiful engineer, Ronnie Lawrence. I'll mention his name. He's donated $10,000 towards sponsoring these young people. And he said to me he's going to go another $10,000, and that way he's replaced himself in the industry.
Isn't that great?
That's what a beautiful great. Man, Ronnie. Yeah, great engineer and great person.
Thanks for all your information too, Michael. People don't know these things, and it's only when we talk to people like you we find out what's happening around the joint.
Yeah, thanks, Macca. And I drove the New England Highway, and all those poor truck drivers and farmers, I wish they'd get rid of this fuel excise tax for them.
It's on all the boats, I assume, coming in from wherever, although I don't know if they're paying the same prices as we are in Australia.
Yeah, we call them bunkers in fuel in Singapore, and so they'll pass the cost on to us, because container ships use a huge amount of diesel, so it's inevitable, everything will go up. That's if we've got diesel left. As Colin said, we lost a lot of refineries, we import everything.
Did you hear the call earlier this morning? Who was it? Was it John New Holbrook? And he said Altona, the refinery at Altona, has been closed down, but it's fit for purpose. And you could retool it in 8 weeks, apparently, he said, and it could be up and running and whatever. And how many more oil shocks do we need in Australia before the penny drops and we say, well, look, we need to make a future? What about the future fund? We need to make a future and make sure that – did someone send me an email and said, did you know that China's got 1 billion litres of fuel in reserve or something like that? So I don't know.
Yeah, I brought a tanker in 2 weeks ago into Botany, 100,000 tonne of jet fuel. It all came from China.
Yeah.
But China can turn the tap on us. They all can. Yeah. They all can. And then we're in big trouble.
Good on you, Mike.
Thank you, Macca.
See ya, mate.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye. Oh, my friend Luciano. Good morning, Luciano.
Good morning, Ian. I'm here with another couple members of our club in Port Vila.
Port Vila.
Looking at the harbour here, beautiful liner ship in the middle of the harbour. And we are here waiting to talk to you. And explaining to you what lovely job we've been doing, the program and the progress that we achieved in this period of time.
So what? This is your Rotary Club, and what are you doing in Port Vila?
We had in a village called Malatia. A program about building some school classes there. And it's been a very, very interesting thing. But if you don't mind, Ian, just say hello now to Linton, and he's the builder, and he will explain to you a bit better if you have a minute, please.
Yeah, I do.
This one is Linton Kettle from Barrow.
All right. Good on you. Linton, g'day.
Good morning, Macca. How are you?
Good, thanks, mate. You're from Barrow. You're in Port Vila. What's happening? You're a builder, is that right, Linton?
That's right, and we've had a team from the Barrow Mittagong Rotary Club building two classrooms at the Malaitia School, which is north of the Fati in Vanuatu. Now, we've got a team of 11, primarily members of the Barrow Mittagong Rotary Club, but with several very helpful guest volunteers along with us as well. This is one of our longer-term projects, I guess, working for Rotary Australia World Community Service. Luciano, who you know well, has been spreading Italo Australian cultural elements on the job as well. So we've had a very entertaining time. However, the job has been very hard. The weather has been incredibly hot, and in fact, unseasonably hot. And unfortunately, we haven't completed everything, and we'll have to come back, hopefully with Luciano, to complete the job.
I was wondering about that, Linton. When you do something like that, is this a prefab schools that you erect, or what's the story? And you've got to lay slabs, I suppose, and all that sort of thing.
Yes, we've done all that, and as you can imagine, our teams are getting a little older. We've been doing a lot of roof work and drainage and what have you. And any more volunteers would be most welcome. We've raised over $30,000 to do this project, and again, naturally, we'd like some more. So anybody who's interested and perhaps would like the naming rights on one of these classrooms, they're more than welcome to approach the Barrow Mittagong Rotary Club and speak to us or our leader, Rod Astrap.
Well, again, like lots of Australians, you're doing great work. People, Australians around the world, helping others, which is good, and helping us ourselves as well. Good on you, Linton. It's great news. But yeah, there's nothing worse than working in. So I suppose it's hot and humid as well, is it?
Oh, yes. You're certainly looking for a beer around about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah,
if not earlier.
if not earlier. But look, I'd like to put you on to newer volunteers, Dawn Simpson.
All right, quickly.
Hi, Macca. How are you? It's Dawn.
Hi, Dawn.
I joined Rotary in July, and I just want to say what a wonderful group of people, what an amazing organisation.
Exactly.
And the things that you learn with the projects every individual club puts out and the things they achieve around the world is just extraordinary. So proud to be part of the team.
Well, you, Dawn, we need more people like you, Dawn and Linton and and Luciano. But I suppose it only happens when you're young. I suppose you've got a family to raise or you're a young kid and you're riding around on an e-bike and you don't give a stuff about anybody else. But sooner or later, when you get old, but I suppose it's down to us. And I suppose we've had a good life, most of us, so we've got to give back in some way.
It's about giving back. That's exactly right. And apart from doing things in our local community, we can all reach out and help those that aren't as blessed as we are in Australia. Mm. So it's great to be over here and seeing the children and the gratitude of the teachers at the school. They're just an amazing bunch of happy, happy people. So it's a great thing we're doing.
It certainly is. Nice to talk to you, Dawn. I'll see you sometime down in Barrow or wherever you live down there. And please thank Luciano, my friend Luciano.
I'm going to put him back on. Oh,
listen, Ian, I see you in 2 weeks' time for dinner in my place. Okay?
All right, sounds good. Sounds good, mate.
Keep in touch.
I will. And thanks for your call. You inspire us all. Good on you, Luciano.
Always,
thanks, mate.
Always wonderful. Bye-bye, Ian, and God bless you all. And happy Easter.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Hi, Macca. It's Sandra. How are you?
Sandra, I'm all right. What's happening?
I'm just currently paddling on the Narrows down at the Coorong in South Australia.
Oh, what a lovely thing to do.
it's really peaceful. A lot of pelicans, swans, ibis, eagles.
And so did you hear our call earlier this morning from Pete, who was out, or he had been just out to, again, out to Lake Eyre, and he said the pelicans have arrived? Because last year, when we talked about the influx of the water, there wasn't many birds around, but now there's thousands and thousands of pelicans. But Sandra, whereabouts again on the Coorong are you?
Well, I live in Bang, which is on...
Sorry, start again. I just lost that bit again. You live where?
I live at a place called Narong, which there's, if you're familiar with South Australia, you've got the two lakes, Lake Albert and Lake Alexandra, and in between is an area called the Narrows, and I back onto that so I can come out and kayak as often as I like, and it's really, really peaceful.
I can hear the water. Isn't it marvellous? I'm sitting here in this little studio. And that's operative word. And I can talk to you, and I can just imagine you just drifting along yes. in your little kayak in the Narrows with all your bird life around, and splash your paddle for me. Oh dear! So you do this all the time, Sandra?
Yes, because I live here, I can just come out anytime I like. So it's really enjoyable.
I'll say, and how come you live there? Have you always lived around the Coorong?
No, we only recently moved down in the last 8 months.
How come?
But we've always liked this area, so.
Mm.
So when the opportunity came up to buy, we are here.
Is it expensive to buy?
No, I phoned years ago from Christmas Island. Christmas.
You phoned us from Christmas Island?
Yeah, a couple of Christmases ago. So I ran up to say I was over on Christmas Island.
I see. So you get around a bit, Sandra?
I like nature, so I go out and travel a little bit. And January I actually was fortunate enough to go over to the Galapagos Islands. So it's really, we've got a beautiful world, you know. We just got to look after it a little bit better.
Well, it's too many people, Sandra. That's my take on it all. You won't look after the world while you keep increasing the population wherever you are. Look at the big cities of Australia, Melbourne and Sydney and Brisbane are being smashed. And you know, people say, "Oh, no, look, Mexico City and Jakarta and stuff. They're huge cities." But you know, there's a happy medium, Sandra, and unfortunately the world and humans don't seem to be able to find that happy medium. They just go headlong and rush, 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 and people making money and billionaires and trillionaires, and we lose something along the way, as Judy Collins sang in that song that was written by, I think, Buffy St. Marie. Something's lost and something's gained in living every day, but what we lose, I think, is more than what we gain. But it's no good being miserable about it, Sandra. You're inspiring us there on the Coorong, and that's what we're all going to aim to do, get a kayak and come down to your joint. And,
no, not too many people, please.
I'll only bring a couple, okay. Sandra. Do you still work, Sandra, or you're retired or what?
No, I took early retirement. I got tired. Things I saved up and retirement.
Well, there you go, and you're enjoying living the dream. So how long will you go kayaking for this morning? So you'll be out there for a while? A
couple of hours, yeah, then back, yeah.
And is the Coorong fresh or salty or what, a bit of both? Or?
Well, you've got the Southern Ocean, then you've got a big mound of sand dunes, and then you've got the actual Coorong, so that's brackish. And then the Narrows is the Coolum end of the River Murray, so it gets a bit monkey up around here.
What a lovely place to be, Sandra.
Yeah, so it is lovely. You just float around and there's huge pods of pelicans at times, and it's a little bit scarce today, but they're probably all gone on holiday up Lake Eyre, so. but it's still, there's just a little breeze. Sun, beautiful sunrise this morning, and then a bit of sea fog rolled in, so it was lovely.
Thanks for your call, Sandra.
No problems. I'll just make you jealous.
good on you. Thank you. Ian's on the line. Ian, good morning.
Good morning, Ian. How are you?
Good. Ian's the bloke who rang us last week, ladies and gentlemen, and said, listen, next Sunday is the 88th day of the year, and it's the 88th day of the year, that's today. And he said there's 88 keys on a piano. So some little possum, it might have been Ian, has named this International Piano Day. How did it, Ian, is that, did you do it or someone else did it?
No, I can't take credit for that. In fact, someone far more intelligent obviously did it. it's a good thing, Ian, because you could almost call it International Music Day. However, referring to the piano, of course, the piano was the instrument of choice of almost every composer who ever lived, being such an orchestral instrument. So I think it's just such a nice thing that it's being recognised in such a small way, but an important way.
Uh-huh. And you're doing something special for International Piano Day, aren't you, at your place? You live at Montville, is that right?
Yeah, I do. My wife and myself, we live at Montville in a place called, we call it our home, Lucas Parklands, after my desire to live in a park-like environment. And we put a little concert hall, and we have every now and then a few musicians play. And today we are having one of our brilliant young play a recital for us because it's International Music Day, International Piano Day, and also a nice way to spend a Sunday.
Exactly, playing the piano. And Ian Lucas, ladies and gentlemen, is on the line, and he's you won a competition, the best piano player in Australia over 30. Is that right? Something like that.
Yeah, look, it is. It is true. In 2020, I got word that there was a competition being sponsored by the Sydney International Piano Competition, and they were putting out feelers to extend the competition to the enthusiastic amateur who may have passed his use-by date a little bit. And I thought, well, I should enter because if no one enters these things, then they die on the vine. Mm. So I entered, and I was a co-winner with a lady from New South Wales in 2020. And in 2023, they extended it to Australia and New Zealand. And I just got word again and said, well, because it's extended, would you enter again? So I did. And I won it that year as well. So it was a bit daunting and a bit. Sometimes I like to get embarrassed about it because you only beat those who enter, of course. Yeah. But it was judged by people in London. The recordings were sent to London, and there were four pianists in London were adjudicators and awarded me the win. So yeah.
Now, Ian, you're amongst other things, you're a pilot, an airline pilot. Is that right? Or
yeah, I was. So I was in the industry for 30 years. I learned piano in Hobart, Ian, where I was brought up, and I had a father who was, he was a very good man, hardworking man, and Hobart back in the 70s was a little bit cave-like. It was dark and rained a lot, and there was no sunshine like there is today in the artistic scene. It's a much more vibrant city now, and wonderful city than it was back then. Anyway. So I was discouraged, and I'm actually a dropout. I dropped out at, I dropped out in year 11, didn't play, and I worked in, had just various jobs. I didn't complete a degree in anything, especially not music, really. But I've always been an avid follower and learner, and I didn't play for 30 years.
Really?
Because I didn't play. I practiced between 10 and 18. I was a 6-hour a day man, and plus everything else. And then for 30 years beyond that, I didn't play at all because I was working, and I worked as an outback mailman in the Northern Territory. I lived in Alice Springs, working for a guy called John Tilley, who's a very special operator and a very forward-thinking man as well. And I learned a lot from him. And till air, as many pilots did. But I got into the RFDS, and I was captivated by the fact that the team of the RFDS, if someone doesn't show up, then the plane can't go and save somebody. So everybody was reliant on everybody being there on time and in great shape. So I really enjoyed that. So I lived in places where there was no piano. And then I got back to Brisbane eventually And my wife says, well, you better get yourself a piano. And it's been so many years, I'd actually forgotten when I started again. So after a 30-year hiatus, my wife encouraged me to play, so I did, and I did a little practice and picked it up again and continued.
Bob's your uncle.
And, well, I mean, it's tough. I mean, practicing's tough.
I know.
And it's hard, but I think the important thing is with music, and if it's hard, you mustn't mind that it's hard. You just accept that it's hard and that it will, tomorrow it'll be a little less hard, and eventually you break it and you can play something. So that's how it is. Yeah.
Ian, nice to talk to you. Thanks for alerting us to International Piano Day. I think music makes the world go round. For me, it does. And
it helps, yeah.
It certainly helps, doesn't it? It's a wonderful thing. And, yeah, you'll have a little concert. Now, I noticed when I looked at you on the thing, you have a little is it like a concert hall? I was thinking that would be a nice little place. I could come and do a concert there at that little is it sort of theatre in the half round or something, a semicircle?
Something like that. Look, it is. But look, if you've got a couple of minutes, I can tell you the history of it. But you mentioned the fact recently that there's no music or no backyard bands, and you sort of answered the questions, because back in 1990, Ian, the World Cup was played in Rome, in Italy, and three guys got up in very well-tailored suits, one Italian and two Spanish, and that was beginning of the three tenors.
All right.
They became the three tenors, and they were like the apex of all of all music, and they had marketing, and they had project, they had all the stuff, and and in 1994 when they did the Nelson Dorma thing in Hollywood, that to me was the sign that the small venue was going to die, because if you weren't the three tenors or in their team, there was no room for anybody else, and there wasn't for many years. There was big concerts and online selling and CDs. You can still buy this. You can still buy these CDs from the today online if you wanted.
Yeah.
And that's a great thing. It brought music to a lot of people, and 800 million watched the opening of that World Cup, I believe. Now, however, where is the space because of that for the brilliant young? Where do the brilliant young who want to have a band, where's the Brian Wilsons from the Beach Boys, and where do these people now start and go? There's nowhere for them to go because their habitat.
And the brilliant and the brilliant old as well. I mean, don't just mention the young, mention the old. And the trouble is, I don't think as many young kids are playing. Now, they do it and they learn at school and they in bands and they go to the con, but I don't know where you know, music is just not, it's not big now. The mobile phone is big now. That's what's big. But it shouldn't stop people like you and I and lots of young kids. And I think that little space of yours, where is it? In Montville, is it?
It is, yeah, Montville. It's in Narrows Road, Montville, mate. Yeah, thanks.
I'll keep in touch with you and come and see you.
I've
got to fly, but thanks for telling us about International Piano Day.
A pleasure.
Good on you, mate. And the black notes play louder than the white, I'm told. see ya. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Craig here. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Craig.
I rang you about 8 months ago. I was in a industrial city in China called Lanzhou New. When I was in the dairy industry, I was doing some commissioning there.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to you for quite some time about it and just, how they are living there in industrial China. Anyway, I left industrial China and I went into India and southern India, a place called Coimbatore, and then down into a village called Erode, and I've been there for 3 months. And I was just going to talk to you about the difference in the dairy practices between China and India.
Where are you now, Craig?
I'm in Plymouth in Wisconsin now, so I got home for about 9 days back to Australia, and then I flew out. So I'm in the Midwest in Plymouth.
So the difference between China and India, what, in dairy? Tell me.
Yeah, it's just absolutely the contrast. So China, they were still learning in the cheese industry. So I think I was telling you that we set up the first automated cheese plant in China. So pretty rewarding and got it going for them. And I didn't know what I was in for when I hit India. But let me say I was right down in a little village called Erode, and it's a private enterprise. And they're making stuff at the facility. It's quite a large facility, and they're making chocolate and ice cream and yogurts and things like that, but they haven't got an automated cheese plant, but they have now. So the automated, like the milk comes into a vat, then goes onto these belts and gets drawn up into these towers and comes out in 20-kilo blocks. But the milk collection in India was just mind-boggling. So they get about 10 litres per cow in India. So if you compare that with Australia, we get probably 33, 34 per day. They get 10 because the grasses and things are very poor. But currently they've got 65,000 families supplying the factory, which equates to 83,000 milking cows. All that's going into that one factory.
Well, everybody's got a job then, Craig, haven't they?
Look, it's just extraordinary. And when, because I've been in the industry in Australia for so long, and, you know, if you get big companies out there that's picking up, you know, 200 or 300 different suppliers, it becomes difficult to keep track of the milk and you know, with what farmers might have coliforms and all that type of stuff. But when you got 65,000 suppliers, it is just mind-boggling. So they haven't got dairy farms as we know it. It'll be mum and dad just living out in these little villages, and they might have two cows and a buffalo. So they just get up and they milk them by hand, and then the milk just goes in a little billy and they put it on their scooters, and then they take it to a collection point. Now, the collection point ranges, but some of them are 100,000 litre silos in the ground, so they just tip the milk into those silos, and then the trucks come out and pump it out and then take it to the factories.
Wow.
And then we start treating it. It's just mind-boggling. So the first thing it goes through is what they call a clarifier, and that just cleans all the hair and dirt and everything like that out. So we don't do that in Australia, but they have to do that there in India. And then we pasteurise it hotter than what we do in Australia. And then it sits at about 2.5 degrees in 100,000 litre silos. But
what an education for us and for you, Craig, to do that, to go to China and to go to India and look at that. And you, of course, you work in Australia. So, and you're a cheesemaker, is that right? Or you supply the machines that make the cheese?
That's exactly right, Mako. Mm-hmm. I do work for an American company. I'm in the southern part of it, but yes, we make these machines, and I think I was telling you last time, they're about the size of a house, a standard size house in Australia would be the belts, and it's just they range from sort of 3 tons an hour up to, you know, the big plants are doing 16 tons per hour of cheese.
So many people in the world, they need to be fed. Craig, listen, I've got to fly, I've got a million things to do. How's things in Wisconsin?
Very cold, Macca. Last night at about 5 o'clock, it was -3 degrees. So,
wow.
It's
spring. Spring can really hang you up the most. Apparently you're in spring, we're in autumn here. But Craig, great to keep in touch. When you come back to Oz, you better come in and show me photos. I don't know, to experience India is something else, about all sorts of things, isn't it? It's something else. It's very what's the word? It's down there. It's very ground level stuff, isn't it? In everything, and yet they make wonderful rugs and all that sort of stuff in little suburban villages and all sorts of things, and in lots of ways it works.
Yeah, look, Macca, you're exactly right. I've seen right near the factory in these little villages, I could see two kids and their parents laying with cattle in the morning when I was going to work, and I said to the driver, "What's going on here?" And he said, "They're staying warm." So they couldn't even afford the bedding, so they were just laying on the ground, and they're sound asleep, cuddled up to their cows. Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Craig.
No worries. See you.
See you, mate. G'day, this is Macca. Look at the time.
Hi, Mac.
Hi.
Hi, Macca.
Yeah, g'day.
It's Paul calling from Chad in Central Africa.
Oh, Chad. Interesting place. Chad, I've not been there, but... You're a third call from Chad over the last 20 years, but what are you doing there, Paul?
I work for a linguistic organisation. I'm the Director of Technical Services, and I'm here for an extended period to try to install a solar electrical system. We've been working on the project for a number of years, so it's good to actually be getting close to sort of installing the equipment. So yeah, for a 12-week.
12 weeks. Sorry, and Chad's got, haven't they got lots of oil in Chad? Or?
Well, it has oil, but the quality of the oil, it's not worth extracting it. So it depends. Probably now it's worth it because the oil price has gone up. But for a while, the quality wasn't there. But yes, there was a lot of oil in Chad.
Yeah, because I remember talking to someone years ago about that, and they said most of the oil money that was in Chad didn't go to the, you know, wasn't distributed amongst all the people. It was, yeah, there was a few problems in Chad, but it's a bit like gold. I was talking to Blake about gold last week, and they were back mining tailings down in Ballarat, Bendigo, and it was never, you know, they were tailing, there wasn't enough gold in the tailings to worry about it. But now that the price has gone through the roof of gold, of course they're doing going through the tailings again. But anyway, So Paul, what's it like living and working in Chad?
Well, we my wife and I lived and worked in Chad between 2011 and 2020, and we enjoyed the lifestyle here. I had Australians working here in Jemena, the capital city, and so there's gum trees out the window, and blue skies remind me a lot of Perth, and so it's really good to live here. And since 2020, because we had to come home because of my wife's health, this is the eighth trip back. Normally I do 6 weeks, this time I'm doing 12 to try to get the project finished. So yeah, I enjoy living in Chad.
What about the local? What are the locals like, Paul? How do you find the locals?
Brilliant.
Yeah, tell me.
Yeah, brilliant. That's the hardest thing about leaving Chad is saying goodbye to my Chadian colleagues.
Chadian.
But it's always nice coming back.
Yeah. So, and this solar electrical system that you're building, tell me more about that.
Well, we've been working with people in Africa area with the organisation that have the knowledge about electrical and about solar and so on, and we put a system together using parts that we can buy here in Africa, and also we'll need to import some of it, but it will be in the region of about 225 to 250,000 Australian dollars. We're trying to do a whole centre, and be sort of 80% reliant on the solar, so that we don't have to use the generator very much, and the local power company is not always 100% reliable. So,
like everywhere, Paul. Like everywhere in the world, too many people. Yeah. Everybody wants to turn the plug in. I just look at my office and I look at my home, and there's things plugged in. Never used to be, but now I'm plugging in everything. My battery on my guitar tuner went flat the other day, and I thought it was. And then I realised it's a plug-in battery, so I have to go even plug in your damn tuner. So. It's a different world, Paul. But I think was it 10 years ago, and someone said to me, Macca, there's at least 1 million Australians living and working overseas, and you're just one of them. Like, and Craig before, who's in Wisconsin, but he was in India, he's in China. It's a great education for you, Paul. You bring back that knowledge to Australia, which is good too, I think.
Yep, it is. But it's always good to come back home.
I'll bet. Good on you, Paul. Great to talk to you. Thank you.
You too, Mac.
See you, mate. G'day, this is Macca.
Lawrence here.
Lawrence, is it?
Yes.
Hi, Lawrence.
How you going?
You're in where?
Bundy, mate.
Oh, Bundy, you've had some weather too there, haven't you?
We have, mate. Yeah, we had a bit of a flood about 3 weeks ago now.
Yeah.
Sort of, yeah. But anyway, it's all done and dusted. I was cutting a bit of turf this morning. I thought I'd give you a call, say hello.
As you do. Good on you. Yeah.
As I do, yeah.
Does turf grow? Because if it doesn't grow, I'll swap it for my lawn because my lawn's giving me a pain in the neck. It's up around my ankles every time I look at it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You need a mowing man, mate.
I do. Several. Yeah. Several.
No, that's all right, though.
So that's what you do. Were you flooded with your turf?
No. Our place doesn't get flooded, no. But everything came to a standstill. We couldn't get to town and all the rest of it, you know. And plus, I had to clean up and how it goes. But, yeah.
And you had a flood about, what, 5 years ago or 8 years ago or something? It was a big one.
2013, we had the big one. Yeah, that's a record one. Yeah, it done a lot of damage, that one. Took out roads and, you know, yeah, it's real destructive when you have that sort of floods. But anyway, yeah. The worst part with our job, Mac, is that you can't get any bugger to work for you anymore. Nobody wants to work. So.
Well, everybody says that, Lawrence. And I just, we were talking about, you know, when I went to school at Cogra High, kids wanted to leave. Some kids wanted to leave at 14 years and 10 months, I think, or 9 months, whatever it was. And I can't see any reason why you wouldn't want to do that. I mean, I went to uni and all that, and you end up at 20 and you haven't had the experience of life. I think, and the kids who left at school, they've become foremen and, you know, builders and all sorts of things. So, you know, I think, I don't know why you have to, I think you've still got to get the leave, you know, in year 12, haven't you? Or can you leave earlier?
No, I think you can leave early. My nephew did. He's on the farm with us, a younger nephew, and he left he was an 11, yeah. But he had to have a job, of course, which he got one here, you know. So, yeah, with us on the farms. I'm on the farm with me brother and myself, you know, family run business.
I'll see you in Bundy, Ross. I've got to fly. I'd like to thank our wonderful team here, Peter Clemson, technical producer, Lee Kelly, our producer extraordinaire, and Tanya Buckland, your little possum. Stay tuned on ABC Local Radio. Always a wonderful morning. See you at the show. There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at maccatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.